Welcome back to Frank Relationships, where we provide a candid, fresh, and frank look into relationships with a goal of acceptance, respect, and flexibility. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me and my Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn personas and links at franklove.com. You're also welcome to check out this week's blog, Standards versus Expectations. In it, I explore how knowing yourself and what you want is great, but unless the object of your interest is a mind reader, you may have to communicate your expectations or risk losing out on a great opportunity. This week on Frank Relationships, we are joined by Jeff. Jeff has been married for 27 years. He's known his wife since junior high school, considers himself experienced, happily married, and has two kids, 24 and 21. For the sake of flavor, it's also worth noting that Jeff is a 52-year-old white guy and I'm a 39-year-old black guy. Let's see what the contrast brings. Jeff, it's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Frank. And before we get into this, I just want to compliment you on the show and the fact that you are on the air and helping folks with relationships, exposing other people's experiences and opinions certainly does help put things in perspective. If nothing else, it just gives folks another opportunity to hear, you know, how it's done maybe differently, successfully, or in some cases unsuccessfully. So it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Why, thank you. 27 years.
Seems like yesterday.
Okay.
But it seems like, I mean, the good thing about it is it's going to be 28 years actually next month. I didn't go into it thinking it's not going to last, first of all. But I never envisioned, you know, looking back on how long it has actually lasted. You know, things just started happening. I got married 2 days after my 25th birthday. And my wife was 24 at the time. As you mentioned, we met in junior high school. We both came from a small town. We started dating in high school and broke up, got back. We're both from New York. I moved down to D.C. to go to school. She moved down a couple years later to go to school. But marriage wasn't that, you know, wasn't the intention. Staying with each other forever didn't cross our mind until I actually started my career. And saw that she was sort of my discipline. She kept me on the straight and narrow and was very concerned and had a vested interest in my success. And that added to everything else that was positive in our relationship. Love, companionship, we had a lot of things in common, all of that. But, you know, I could have made a right instead of a left many times, and she kept me, you know, kind of grounded, I guess. And that's when I saw that this was, you know, who I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, could be a good mother. She's a great cook. I'm a great eater. Yeah, things like that.
Perfect.
So, you know what I mean? So, you know, yeah, you do get along. Now, a lot has changed in 27 years. You know, career changes and twists and turns, kids, moving. I haven't done the math. We probably moved 4 or 5 times. This is, this is life. But if you can't bend and twist and share it and shape yourself so that it works with your partner, something's going to go wrong. And, you know, it could be the smallest, trivial, most trivial thing, or it could be something huge and you know, disastrous. Same thing goes for the positives. It's those little things that I enjoy most. You know, the joke, getting the joke, watching movies like Bridesmaids or, you know, what did we see recently? I thought was ridiculous but funny. Dictator, stuff like that. Sharing those kinds of things and also hating the same things, you know, watching The Voice and agreeing that that person sucks. You know, that's all part of it. And you haven't asked this question yet, but the biggest part, at least in the past 25 years, has been kids. The single most important thing that we have in common is that we care about our kids more than anything else. It's the single most important thing that we have in common that we share. And some folks don't have that same priority. You know, as it turns out, we do.
Speaking of caring about your kids, tell me about your co-parenting philosophy, style. Do you find that you basically do things 50-50? Do you care whether you do it 50-50? How would things be? How do you estimate things would be if you, well, they're 21 and 24 now. There's not much co-parenting you have to do.
No, not anymore. You know, when they turned around 15, we both looked at each other and said, our job is done.
Yeah.
But if I can remember correctly, you know, back when they were real young, we never kept a tally. You know, you do this, I do that. If the baby got up and, you know, my wife had a bad day, I ran over and, you know, I took care of it. I changed my share of diapers. I warmed up bottles. I walked them in strollers, all that stuff. We both taught them how to ride bikes. I coached the games. My wife was in the stands, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think co-parenting is a good way to phrase it. But again, we never really hear, you do this, I'll do that. We're at 60-40 this week. You need to do more that week. Just like the consideration I have and had for her as a partner, I had it and have it for her as a mother. They, you know, like I said, there are those minor things. I'll take my son to a ball game. She'll take my daughter to a chick flick. But we don't say, oh, you're spending too much time with her and I'm spending too much time with him. That never really comes into play. Doing things as a family, I have to say, I think we did more than other folks. For 10 years, I lived in the New York area, lived in New Jersey. And as tired as I might have been on a Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, as much as I wanted to watch that football game, we made a concerted effort to, you know, run into New York City, go to a museum, go down to Chinatown and have something to eat, do something as a family that I remember from when I was a kid. So we wanted to make those memories for our kids. And also, we knew that we had this cultural mecca, you know, 20 minutes from the house. And we wanted our kids to know what New York was, what Broadway was, what the subway was. My son was a gifted piano player and an athlete. And I did things like I took him into the city to see Herbie Hancock so he could hear what a real piano player sounds like. I took what my father did to me when I was 15 because I played basketball. He dropped me off at some court in Brooklyn and said, see you later. And I had to fend for myself. I didn't exactly do the same thing for my son, but I did have a job once that that was in Spanish Harlem all the way up in the 120s. And I took my son with me. And while I was working, it happened to be in a school. I was doing some work. He was out in the playground. And, you know, he came in, I think it was like 7 or 8 years old. And I said, Sean, what have you been doing? He said, oh, hooping with the homies. those words never came out of his mouth before. So I went outside to shoot some baskets with him. And it was the first time he ever shot on a basket, on a rim with no net. You know, honestly, you know, we lived in the suburbs, you know, so whereas you would hear swish or he'd make a basket and go nothing but net because it would just go in cleanly, you know, he'd shoot a basket and went right through the rim and he'd look at me and go nothing but no net. Again, these are the small things, but these are the memories. I could still look at my son and go nothing but no net. And it was just that one day, you know, up in Spanish Harlem in New York. So, to your point of sharing responsibilities, I think also there comes a time where when there are other problems in a relationship, some people tend to keep score. You're not doing this enough. I need more of that. And, of course, I think that's a healthy conversation to have. And I've had it, but I couldn't qualify for you, Frank, whether it's 50-50, 60-40. I just know that, you know, we get along as parents. I know our kids respect us as parents. And I don't know if the word role model, you know, I don't want my kids to do what I do or what I did. I certainly don't want them to do what I do professionally because I want them to be more successful. But that's just typical. Every parent wants, you know, things better for their kids than they had it.
Interesting that you mention the memory and heaven basically not keeping tally. I was interviewing a author. He wrote a book called Moonwalking with Einstein a little while ago, and the book is about how to improve your memory. And he gives this technique that's supposedly, you know, tried and true about improving your memory. And I asked him what he had to say about relationships, if he could give me a relationship tip, and he said, have a short memory. So that kind of supports exactly what you're saying. I can really appreciate it. Also, on the sake for the sake of self-promotion, you mentioned watching Bridesmaids with your wife and her your daughter and mom going to see a chick flick. Well, I wrote a blog a few months ago and did a video component of it, also called Take Her to a Chick Flick, mm-hmm. where we discuss the beauty and men taking their wives to chick flicks because mm-hmm. they just seem to enjoy them.
No, it's true. Like, and it's even a joke now. If I see Jennifer Aniston's name attached to a movie, I know I don't want to see it. And I think she's sexy, you know, and sometimes funny. But I know it's one of those, you know, with the exception of maybe Along Came Polly, whatever that movie was with Ben Stiller, which was very funny. But she does chick flicks. It's the same like, you know, Nicolas Cage. I see his name attached to a movie. I don't want to see it. Although he's National Treasure was a good movie and Face Off was a good movie. But it just those kinds of things. So those are those little inside jokes that we have. But I'm not spending, you know, what's a movie cost us now? $30? I'm not doing that for something that I've seen time. I mean, that's what chick flicks are. They're kind of formula, in my opinion. But women need that. I understand. Women need that escape. So take your daughter.
So as much as you realize that you don't want to see it, might it be safe to say you're going to see it anyway at home?
Or perhaps at home. I mean, and now, you know, with cable, there's 10 of them on a night. And you know, it'll start it, and I'm like, maybe I saw this, maybe I didn't. I know how it's going to end, though, you know. And if there's a couple of laughs along the way, yeah, that's fine, you know.
I can relate all too well. You mentioned flexibility and how important it is. Have things gone wrong, even though you've been flexible?
Of course.
Okay.
Oh, of course. And I can't give specifics because if I did, you know, everyone in your listening audience will relate to it directly. It happens. One thing that's ongoing, I like to be on time. I like to be early. In my opinion, you always plan for traffic or plan for something. And if I get where I'm supposed to be, whether it's a wedding or even a movie, if I'm there 10, 15 minutes early, okay, so let's chill, let's talk, let's get a coffee, whatever. You're there on time, you're there. Nothing's going to happen, you know, as you walk 20 feet from your car to the movie theater or to the church or whatever. My wife's the opposite. We got to be there at 7. Well, 10 to 7, maybe I'll put my shoes on. And yeah, maybe it's a pet peeve of mine, but I don't go nuts about it anymore, other than if it is a wedding and we're going to be late, you know, I'll start freaking out at a half hour before. You want to be on time for stuff like that. I just find that to be disrespectful. But for some reason, again, in my opinion, if you can be consistently 5 or 10 minutes late, you can be consistently 5 or 10 minutes early. That's just a little thing about me. Maybe that bothers her. I don't know. But being flexible, I don't freak out anymore. Hey, it's your friend's wedding. You want to be late? Fine. I'm not embarrassed walking in with the bride, you know, whatever you want to do. But speaking of flexibility, I think that compromise is one of the bigger components of a successful relationship. And I've told my kids this, you know, who are not in serious relationships. Think about how much you've changed since the age, you know, between 15 and 20, in those 5 years, formative years. You change tremendously. You change physically. Obviously, you change mentally. You're learning. You're going to school, whatever. You're in different social situations. Well, the changes might not be that obvious, but you change just as much between 20 and 25. You change just as much between 25 and 30. Life happens. Stuff happens culturally, you know, society, politically, musically, technology. All of those things lead to changes in your ideas and attitudes. And if you start to change 180 degrees to the right, and your partner starts to change 180 degrees to the left, things are going to have, there are going to be problems. Things are going to, you know, not mesh. So once you notice, or you and your partner notice, that things are changing in opposite directions, you need to reel one another in. How you do that is up to you. You know, it's not a real obvious solution to those types of changes and problems. But compromise is the big one. Oh, you want to go do that? Oh, you're taking tennis now on Tuesday nights? All right, well, maybe I'll go bowling. I don't know. You know, just so that you understand your partner has needs that might be changing. And if you can't be considerate or understanding of those needs, career as well. You know, your partner may be on a different career track. It may take them out of town. They may start traveling for the first time, and they're away from home. That could lead to problems. You miss them. You need them. You rely on them for different things. They're not around anymore. What am I going to do? Well, you got to compromise. Bend and shape. Maybe you take a trip with them once in a while. Maybe you try to understand why they're doing that for the career. It's not just for them, perhaps. It's for the good of the family. All of those things. Consideration and compromise, the two big C's, in my opinion, on how to make it through, you know, kind of rough times. Marriage is a roller coaster. You know, there's highs, you know, and then you take that nosedive and there's lows. But, you know, as long as you stay on the track, you know, it's a fun ride.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love. You can find us at franklove.com. You said compromise and how it helps to, how you have to rein each other in at some point. Mm-hmm. When do you walk away? And I don't get the impression you're a specialist at this, walking away. So you've been in it for quite a while, and I have not heard, other than when you were dating, any signs of wavering.
Right.
But when do you walk away?
Well, we haven't, but I have to be honest, it hasn't always been successful compromise. There were situations where we both realized, hey, we can't work this out ourselves. And we went for some therapy. I don't know very many other people who've lasted more than 20 years in a relationship that haven't sought outside help. You know, whether it's clergy or whether it's an actual, you know, trained person.
What was it?
It was a marriage therapy. And I think we went twice, actually. And what it did for me was...
Two sessions.
Okay. Boom. Two hours.
Oh, got it.
Okay. And the woman who we spoke with didn't say all that much, but the questions she asked to each of us independently helped us understand one another's perspective, because we weren't talking to each other. You know, I'm sitting there and she's referring to me in third person. Well, he did this and he does that and he doesn't understand when I'm home, blah, 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 whatever the situation was. And again, Frank, this wasn't monumental. You know, we've never had affairs. We've never strayed. We've never had those, you know, groundbreaking or ground shattering, you know, situations that destroy relationships. This was just life taking over. I was working 16 hours a day. My wife was home with a 2-year-old and a newborn and a dog. Okay. And we just moved to a new neighborhood, which wasn't very safe. So she felt like a prisoner in the house. All this stuff was going on. Meanwhile, I'm working 16 hours a day, not because I didn't want to be home to help, because I had a new gig and it was difficult and demanding, and I had to put in that time, and it was competitive. So I had to put in the time or I wouldn't succeed. So sitting with that therapist and hearing me answer questions about her, and hearing me answer questions about me and what I was trying to do professionally, was much more effective, and, you know, rung a more sincere and serious chord with her than me actually sitting and talking to her and saying, you don't understand, I have to go to this meeting or I have to do this. Telling someone else, you know, I had to be at this meeting because blah, blah, blah. I know my wife's home with 2 kids and a dog and can't take a walk, you know, can't go outside after 7 o'clock because it's a dangerous neighborhood, whatever it was. That made more sense to her. And conversely, when she was talking about herself and she knew that I was working hard, but it was still frustrating, that rung a chord with me. So, again, hearing, just as maybe folks are hearing me talk about this now on your show, they may be going through something similar. Hearing someone else talk about it gave us that realization, you know, kind of, you know, the light went on and, oh, okay, well, let's work this out. How can we work this out? And I don't know that we ever came to a conclusion, because our life didn't change because of that, those 2 hours with a therapist, but the understanding of one another did. And some things did change. We moved and, you know, I made a more of a concerted effort to get home for dinner at least once a week, you know, those kinds of things. I think, you know, if you have an understanding partner, they will appreciate the effort, even if it's not always successful. But, you know, your original question of when do you walk away? I've seen many folks' relationships blow up over things that are much smaller than that. You know, what some might think is selfish behavior. Now, hey, it's Sunday. I'm drinking a beer and watching the game. I don't care that you have 17 things to do or 17 things on the list of things to do around the house. I'll fix the stairs on Monday night, not on Sunday. I'm watching a football game. That's the guy's prerogative. Some may say that's selfish. You know, you can't really judge other folks' mentality in those kinds of situations. However, if it leads to monumental problems, maybe you shouldn't be as selfish all the time. Be a little bit more considerate, compromise a little bit more, unless you don't care. And I think that's the big answer to the question. It's time to walk away when other things in your life become more important than the relationship, whether that's work, whether that's other relationships, friends or relatives. You've seen it all, Frank. I know, you know, families get involved. That could lead to it as well. So there are so many things. You know, the odds, I'm sitting here saying I'm going to be married 28 years. I don't even like doing things that I really enjoy doing for more than 28 minutes. And here I am 28 years into a marriage. But it's working, you know, and I can't even imagine living any other way, especially in this day and time. Other people think differently. You know, everyone's individual, and other people have different life situations that take them away from the priority of marriage. If you're gonna make the commitment till death do us part, then it's a huge, huge dedicated commitment. And, you know, over time, sometimes you lose the seriousness of it. Some people do. That's when they walk away.
Last week, I interviewed Taurus Mateen, who has two wives and is open to having more. Did you hear the show?
Actually, I did, and I wished I could have asked him a few questions about it. I mean, the obvious things is that it's illegal, number one. There are probably some religious ramifications of it. You know, the machismo in me says, hey, two, three wives, awesome. But it's just not realistic. That animal in all of us can sort of understand how monogamous or monogamy doesn't work, because we're both going to walk out on the street and see something we like walk past. And most of the time, I'm not going to ignore it. I'm not going to jump on it either, but that's just human nature. That girl's pretty. That girl's got a nice body. You talk to somebody professionally. Oh, that person's very nice. I'm compatible with them. But I'm not looking for a relationship. And I'm not looking for an excuse to wreck the one I have. So I think if I even start to consider polygamy, I know that that wouldn't work. It wouldn't work with me because I'd be conflicted emotionally. But I know very few modern women. And the most important thing is I know very few modern women that I respect that would stand for their man being shared.
Do you think the concept of polygamy automatically would interject a tone or aura around destroying the relationship?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just in its nature. You're in a relationship. You're in a monogamous relationship. You're sharing emotions. You're sharing things physically with your partner that shouldn't be shared with anyone else. Now, maybe that's my personal opinion, but there's no way that I would even think of my wife enjoying half the things that we do together with someone else. That is a serious threat to our relationship, to what makes our relationship special. Could she do that with someone else? Absolutely. No, there's a dude out there that wants to go see Jennifer Aniston. I know it. And it's not me. Would she enjoy that? Sure. But would she enjoy, you know, Jonan on The Voice, you know, and those singers and whatever? That could be also. I just know we have something special. And I know if I were to do or share some of the same things that I do and share with her with someone else, that would definitely be a breach of trust in our relationship, let alone two or three other people. Again, I know that there were some religious sects that believe in polygamy. And again, for me, I have very little respect for the women who allow themselves to be put in that situation. I'm not passing judgment. They want to do that. That's fine. I just know that that's not the type of woman I would want to be with.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love. You can find us at franklove.com. What is marriage?
sharing your life with a piece of paper that says you have to continue to share your life with that person. But that's what it is. I don't do anything. You know, when I think, when I act, when I make decisions, I am thinking and acting and deciding as a married man. And I've been doing that longer than I did it as a single man.
I'm going to back up a little bit and introduce another blog that I wrote a while ago. And it was titled just that, What is Marriage? In it, I discussed three different types of concepts that I have around marriage. One is legal. You get a piece of paper from the state that says you're married. Two is more religious, where a religious leader says that you're married. And three is where basically the two of you say that you're married. And that's it. It's just an agreement between the two of you. What do you think about those three categories?
I think they're all the same. I don't think that there's, while there might be gray lines legally, I had an older relative that was a widower, and he met a woman who was divorced. They were both late in their 50s, maybe even 60s. They never got married, but for the next 20 years lived together as husband and wife. And the reason why may have been for either taxes or alimony or whatever it was smarter for them to maintain their last name. But there was no doubt that they were married. You know, they, again, and then they both worked, I guess, for a couple of years and then were retired. But they were inseparable. And when I mean inseparable, they woke up together. They went to the gym together. They ate every meal together. They vacationed together. They lived together. You know, they were married. It was a married couple. They just didn't have that piece of paper. But to them, they were husband and wife. And, you know, maybe because of society's laws, they didn't have a ceremony. She wore a ring. You know, in their mind, they were married. And that's the big thing. In your mind, if you're married, what does it matter, in my opinion?
So if they were living a lifestyle or living in a way that you, let's say he had two wives, would you look at them being someone that you knew and were friends with? Would you look at them as being any less married?
Only because of what we just discussed with polygamy. He says he's married to her. She's happy with that situation. God bless him. No, they're married. I would probably lose a little bit of respect for both of them because of my own values. But that's me. You know, again, I said before, I'm not passing judgment. I would think, how could she share him with someone else? And most people think of the physical part of it. You know, he's sleeping with someone else. Those are things that you should do with one person if you're going to have trust. Because when you're intimate and when you have a successful intimate physical relationship, in my opinion, there's nothing like it in the world. It's very special, and you shouldn't share it with someone else. Again, all this stuff, Frank, is my opinion. So if there's a woman who is open and able and happy to share her man with someone else, not just physically, but also emotionally and mentally, and there's only 24 hours in the day. I know how hard it is to keep up with one woman and two kids. I couldn't imagine another wife with similar needs, demands, wants, desires, tastes, hobbies, all of that. And you know, add some more kids to the mix. Forget about it. You're not sleeping. So for that reason, I wouldn't respect them, because I just don't think that they're the women would be the type of women that I would respect, because they probably don't have a lot of self-respect, you know, being put in a situation where they would share one man. Flip it. What about a woman? A woman having three husbands? Would you want to be one of those husbands? That's the question I would have asked the polygamist, you know. How do you deal with that? And again, not just the physical. The physical is obvious for me. I don't want my woman sleeping with someone else. There's health reasons involved. But even aside from that, the intimate and emotional part of it, everything else in your life, you know, like I said, my wife's a good cook. If she made dinner for my neighbor, I really wouldn't care. But if that neighbor was her husband also, and she was making his favorite meal 2-3 nights a week, you know, I'd have a problem with it. And I don't think that's being selfish. That's being monogamous.
Well, the question was posed to Taurus Mateen about what if his wife had multiple relationships. And he said that the short of it was he didn't, in principle, have a problem with it. You're listening to Jeff. Jeff is with us at Frank Love, at franklove.com. We are Frank Relationships, and I am Frank Love. Taurus mentioned that the relationship that he had where the woman that was also seeing someone else didn't last, but he noted that he didn't have a particular problem with it. So how does that...
Did the other guy?
I don't. He didn't go into that.
I would guess. I mean, just human nature. I would guess that's the situation. But I can't, you know, I'm not a polygamist, so I don't know. I just know that it's a threat to the stability in a dedicated relationship. That's just how it is. There are relationships, women are threatened by men who have female friends, who have female coworkers. And when there's nothing sexual involved, it's just time. You're spending too much time at the office. You're spending too much time with, you know, your coworker. Your boss is female. You're spending too much time. These are things that do threaten, you know, the stability of a relationship. Because there are women who are even jealous of men who spend too much time with their friends. You were out last Friday night. What are you talking about? All of these things, again, as minor as they sound, they compound over time. The idea of them compound over time. So again, that polygamy thing, as much as, you know, in the back of your mind, you go, oh, I'd like to do that for a week. Realistically, I can't see it sustaining. Again, unless the people involved in it are totally able and willing, and I don't know people like that. I don't spend time with people like that. I don't know how they deal with it.
Now I'm going to throw some of your words back at you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You noted how flexibility was critical in a relationship, and basically a lack of it is a threat to a long-standing relationship. Now, as we look at men and women who may be interested in, let's say, you could be married in a long-term relationship, and one or both may become interested in someone else. Wouldn't the willingness to allow that from one partner to another be a form of flexibility? And isn't that willingness and that level of flexibility as unique between two people as what you're saying the uniqueness that comes from monogamy is?
The short answer is yes. You're absolutely right. Open marriage, for instance. Married to someone for 5 years. We both have someone on the side. They do things for us physically and mentally that our legal partner doesn't. We have an open marriage. If it works for them, they're flexible enough to have it work. That's wonderful. And they're happy. I can't see that working for me because I don't understand, or I can't wrap my head around being that flexible. There's a line. And maybe it's a legal line, but there's a line that's been drawn in the sand. Hey, we're married. We do this. We act a certain way. Just as serious, I take that just as seriously as I do the fact that, hey, I'm a parent. I have to act a certain way. I have been in situations where I want to act a different way, and this has nothing to do with sexuality or even emotionally. I'm just talking about as a parent. I want to scream at that ref. I want to yell at that coach. They're wrong. But that's my six-year-old on the bench. I have to set a better example, even though the ref was wrong and the coach was wrong and the parents on the other side are wrong. You have to have a personal sense of responsibility. And where do you draw that line? So to use the word flexibility in the same line as open marriage or polygamy, absolutely, Frank, you can do that. And it's an individual thing. I'm not making the rules and regulations for society. I am making them for my house and for myself. And again, the realization that I wouldn't want to have two wives because I wouldn't respect each of them as much as I do my one wife, because how could a woman want to share her husband? I have seen other situations with people who a guy has an affair, the wife knows about it, but it's not coming into play with their relationship. As far as she's concerned, it keeps him happy. He still comes home. He's still paying the bills. He's still a good father to their children. He's getting some on the side once or twice a month. She doesn't have a problem with it because he's very good to her on her terms. Again, I can't pass judgment. They're happy. They're flexible. She's flexible enough to do it. He's fine with it. You know, not maybe not even getting emotionally involved with the other woman. It's a personal thing.
Got it. You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love. You can find us at franklove.com. We've been talking to Jeff. Jeff has been married for 27, going on 28 years. And he has brought us his unique ideas and philosophies on his relationships and relationships in general.
And can I say this, Frank? I'm not an expert. I'm an expert in me.
Got it.
Because I've been doing this longer than anything else. But what I'm saying, in my opinions, take it with a grain of salt. I'm just a guy. You know, I'm not a relationship expert. I don't study relationships. I witness them with relatives and neighbors and friends and acquaintances and professional associates. So I've seen a lot because anyone my age has seen a lot. And that's how I have formulated these opinions and these ethics.
Thanks for being with us today, Jeff. Mm-hmm. And I really want to let you know I appreciate you and all that you've brought with us.
My pleasure.
Have a great one.
Thanks.
Take care.